Session number 14974, Paul Armstrong, Reel 1.
Mr. Paul Armstrong, Reel 1. When and where were you born, Mr. Armstrong?
Bishop Auckland, February 1914. The second son of Paul and Laura Emma Armstrong. And we lived in Salisbury Place.
How many brothers did you have, or brothers and sisters?
I was second, but of course there were four more brothers, no sisters. So we actually enjoyed life from a boyish point of view, but of course had no feminine influence. I was very fortunate in that my father was employed as secretary of locomotive engineering works, and so was comfortably off. And we didn't realise the difference between my father, who was secretary, and the workmen who we saw regularly and who were very happy and cheerful men. We learned later that wages were very, very different. I went to Cockton Hill Council School when I was five, and from the very beginning I had the most marvellous teachers, starting with a Miss Greenwood and then moving on to the next I can remember was a Miss Campbell when I was seven. The next was a teacher called Jim Sanderson, who was a very close friend of my youngest uncle. I unfortunately made a bloomer with him by one day telling my grandmother, who I visited weekly, that the red marks on my hand were caused by application of the stick. At that time, poor Jim was at the football match with my uncle, and when he returned, he had a very hard half hour with my grandmother. But as far as I was concerned, this was one of the, shall I say, penalties of inattention. We never give it any consideration in those days, and it meant that we weren't living up to the standard that we were expected. Then I went into the Mr. Thubburn, Henry Thubburn, who I'll never forget, because he was the brilliant man who insisted that all of his pupils were going to get to the grammar school. And in those days, getting to the grammar school for boys like us was absolutely the summit of our ambition. I can only say that although he had a class of, from memory, it was something like 40 boys, he never failed to attend to everyone. And he must have taken a lot of work home, which we didn't ever appreciate. I can see him now with half cigarette from his lip and his Trilby hat as he tramped home at lunchtime and back again after.
The education you were getting in the primary school, was it extensive?
Very good indeed, yes. We did geometry, or we did the elements of algebra. We didn't do French, we didn't do Latin, which we did later at grammar school, but most of the other was very good indeed. The only thing I found when I eventually got to the grammar school, which was King James I Grammar School at Bishop Auckland, was that the standard which I thought was high, that I'd reached, was equally high with the boys from Crook, Willington, Shildon and all schools round about when competition suddenly became extremely acute.
Did you go to grammar school having sat an examination?
Yes, I sat the examination, called the 11 plus in those days. I may say that in addition to the instruction we had at school, my father was rather a martinet with regard to scholastic achievement, and every evening after 4 o'clock I had to go down to his office, and I was perched up on a high stool and had to do at least 1 hour going over old papers. And father used to, having done it with my elder brother, who was also at the grammar school, he knew as much about these examination papers as I think many of the masters did. Possibly because of that extra incentive, I passed, I hope, reasonably well, and became one of the first 30 boys in 3A. There wasn't a 1 or a 2A for some extraordinary reason, but there was 3A and 3B.
How old were you at this point?
I was 11 and 5 months. We went to the grammar school with great expectations, because King James is a very old foundation and the school itself is very large and imposing, but we new boys were put into a prefabricated building which was called the Rabbit Hutch, and which was in the grounds of the school. It only consisted of 3A and 3B, but it was extremely uncomfortable. It was warmed by one of those old-fashioned coke-burning stoves which was against the master, and we in the remainder of the class were extremely cold.
Did you wear a school uniform?
School uniform was absolutely vital. One had to buy it, and interestingly enough, in view of what's happened in these modern times, on our way down to the school, next to our school was what do you call them now? We used to call it the tin tabbies, because it was solely made out of corrugated iron, and it was for boys who hadn't passed the scholarship. When they saw a boy in the uniform of King James the First School, they were apt to treat them rather badly if they could catch them. The uniform was a cap with a cross in the top, yellow for Swift's house, which I was in, purple for Neil's, blue for King's, and who was the fourth? Morton's was the fourth one. Another unfortunate thing about the school in those days was that the school field undulated, probably because of the pit workings underneath. And so our PT for the first year consisted of pick, shovel, wheelbarrows, and we took off the turf from the top of the undulations and transferred it to the hollows. And finally, by about, I think I would be in the fifth form before we got the school reasonably level to play on. Those things apart, sport was very, very popular. We had exams, just as they have now, very, very competitive, and our marks were sent. I was unfortunate in that father was very friendly with the headmaster, and they used to speak to each other on the telephone, generally to my detriment, because my elder brother, Joe, was very, very dedicated. He worked very, very hard. He worked very hard the whole of his life, that I remember. And I unfortunately had to keep up to his standard. I regret I didn't.
The education that you got in the grammar school, do you Did you feel that it fitted you out well for what life was to come?
It did, but regrettably, when I was 14, my father went into hospital, unfortunately, due to lack of knowledge in those days, died. And mother was left to cope with six boys, the youngest four, the eldest 16. And life became rather difficult. However, she was an incredible woman. I'll never forget how she kept us absolutely up to the mark. Nothing was allowed to flag. Our standards were kept up. And how she managed, I will never to this day know, because although we owned our own house, a widow with six boys wasn't a popular object to the government.
Did you have some income after your father died?
Only at first. The pension that my mother got for herself and the six children. This, as I say, is how I wonder how on earth she managed. I will never know.
Did she have to go out to work or do some work?
No, no. She looked after us, looked after the house, and frankly, I think that to me it's a marvel that she managed. She baked all our own bread. She made all our own clothes. She did all our cooking. We were fortunate in that my grandparents had large gardens with lots of produce. We had an uncle who had a farm. I take it that by means that I wasn't aware of at the time, we acquired sufficient funds and produce and the rest of it to live a perfectly happy life. In fact, I remember we still all got our pocket money. Drastically reduced from when father was alive. I, as a boy of 14, was getting half a crown a week, which in those days a labourer was only paid £2 a week, so my half crown was really a lot of money. When father died, we accepted a cut. My cut was to one penny, which was 1/30th of what I'd been getting. However,
had you fees to pay at the grammar school?
No, I all scholarship. Bishop Auckland Grammar School had no fee paying pupils. That was one of the wonderful things about it, and it gave a remarkable education. Just as a matter of recollection, the first year I was there, I remember two boys getting major scholar awards, one to Cambridge and one to Oxford. I can remember the names even. Harry Sill and Jim Pigg.
Discipline in the grammar school, was that much firmer than you'd had in other schools?
No. No, there was no application of the cane at all. Masters relied entirely on the fact that we boys knew we had to pass. We had to do well, because that was what we were at the grammar school for. Discipline really was, I would say now, first class, although some scamps amongst us did get up to tricks. Nothing vicious, nothing out of the way, and certainly nothing during teaching time.
What did they try to instill in you in a grammar school situation, other than the education?
I think working for the school. We were very patriotic. We literally, when schools played each other, as we did in those days, we almost to a man turned out to support the teams. And I think it was also they made a point of talking to you about the history of the town and what the town become. they also used to talk about the sad thing about the mines, who in my early days were going through a very hard time. 1926 was my second year at school. I was only 12, but I remember the consternation in the whole area when the colliery started closing down. And the nearest one to us at Eldon, which is only 2 miles away, the pump men walked out and Eldon never worked again. A very, very sad blow to the town. So yes, we were really taught to have appreciation of what the town did mean to us. You must remember, in those days, even the radio hadn't come in when I first went to the grammar school. One of my friend's father had a cat's whisker wireless set that he'd made himself, and we used to hear these tinny noises coming from it. But we relied entirely on newspapers and what we were taught. So in those days, we were great readers.
What were your leisure activities as a young boy, Mr. Armstrong?
Well, as a child of 5 and 6, I should think that the main activities were really running about in the playground and at home, literally running after the bigger boys to see what they were doing. But then later on, one started to play in the season, marbles, and then after marbles you played with a hoop that one used to run after, and then you were longing for the day when you got a bicycle. Bicycles had to be earned. But apart from that, there was all sorts of games that boys played. They used to go about in, you might call them gangs. There were little groups of your own peers. And you imagined yourself as cowboys, Indians, soldiers, all sorts of the various things that their local comics. Because don't forget, in those days, one used to be able to buy comic cuts, Wizard, Boy's Own Paper was still running, and they cost very little indeed. Incidentally, one of my own brothers begrudged paying for a comic, and as he was fairly artistic, he wrote, illustrated, and created a comic of his own, which he used to loan out to the other boys at, I'm not sure whether it was a farthing or a halfpenny a week. But he was, in those days, a lot cleverer than I. Later on, of course, we then started to play, we always played football. First, of course, in a little field that was near our house, and then on the bigger field at the school, where we were allowed to play out of school hours, and cricket as well, which could also play in this little field which was bounded by the houses where most of us lived. So really we were an astonishingly self-contained unit. Later on, as I grew older, I got a bicycle and used to ride a lot. And then I, by the time I'd got to the age of, I used to swim mainly in the river. The rivers were clean in those days. Somehow one remembers rivers has always been clean. And the Bedburn River, which was the nicest, was bitterly cold, having flowed all its length over stone. But very invigorating. We used to travel up all these places on our cycles, and we used to take picnics so that we didn't need to return until the full day was over. Later on, I learned to shoot, and I was fortunate that where I was working, by this time I was 16, 17, I knew all the local solicitors. And one of them, Colonel Dowling, owned Hopperland Hall, and he used to let me shoot over his estate. Rap shooting, of course.
You'd have your own gun?
Yes, yes.
Bishop Auckland, where you were born, what kind of place was it?
It was a very compact market town. The River Weir flowed across the north boundary. The River Gornless flowed along the east-south boundary. And the town itself was exactly 1 mile long and 1 mile across. Totally different from what one sees now. The house that I was born in, Salisbury Place, had been built, I think, from memory, in the late 90s, that is 1890s. Then, as our family increased, we moved up into a villa in Cockton Hill, which was the newly developed part of the town, but that wasn't big enough, and we moved into a large four-bedroom terrace house because of the number of children that we'd now grown to. Town itself, in those days, there was an urban district council where I went to work when I was 16, leaving the grammar school, unfortunately early. But that, of course, was to bring in funds towards the family exchequer. And there was also a rural district council, which, as its name implies, included all the villages round about, which now are in the Bishop Auckland area. But there were places like Binchester, Cowden, Leasingthorne, Lee Home, Eldon, South Church, West Auckland, St Helens, Escombe, Witton Park. All of that was included in the rural area, even out as far as places like Evenwood, Linesack and Softly.
These would be very largely mining areas.
They were mining areas, and they came into the town because Bishop Auckland, apart from being the biggest town and the centre of the railway system, also had a market day twice a week. And this was a very, very popular market indeed. And in those days, what people forget now is that shops opened at 8 o'clock in the morning and stayed open until normally it was 6 o'clock at night, except on a Saturday when it was 8 and even 9 o'clock. Even the bigger shops, like Dogart's, would be open till 9 on a Saturday night. The market traders, of course, came and opened out first thing. They would be out and about shortly after 8, and they sold everything. There was when I was with the council, we had a market manager who used to go around, Herbert Ross, the last one, I think, and he told me one day that he rarely had less than 50 stall holders on the marketplace during that Thursday and Saturday market. The Saturday market was slightly more busy than the Thursday market because people, those lucky people that had half day Saturday, could get down to the market before it closed, even though it did stay up until 9 o'clock. But by 9 o'clock on a Saturday night, most God-fearing people went home because Bishop Auckland, as well as rejoicing in two markets, had 46 public houses, inns and workmen's clubs. So that indicated the sort of pastime that most of our fellow townsmen indulged in.
Did you get much opportunity to meet the mining people in the area yourself?
Oh yes, yes. The father of one of my wife's cousins, at least, let me see, that was before, I'm jumping the gun a bit here, sorry. We knew several people who were colliery cashiers, and one of the boys I went to school with, father was a colliery manager. He incidentally was the first boy to come to school in a motor car. He had a little two-seater sport, and he used to take his cap off when he reached the school, put on his school cap, and walk inside as a schoolboy. But that was after I'd left.
What part did the church play in your life?
My family were very, very good Church of England church goers. I went to Sunday school from the age of five, of course, and at one time we six boys were all in the choir. We went to St. Andrew's Church at South Church, which was the church for the town, although father had been a chorister at St. Anne's Church, the new church in the marketplace. He was one of the first choristers when the church opened in 1908. Wrong. 1898, I think I'm probably right in saying. But he was a chorister there, and I still have his hymn book. As well as going to church as a chorister on a Sunday morning at 10:30 for the service then, we used to go to Sunday school at 2 o'clock to the church hall, which was just to the south of where we lived. We went then again to evening service at 6:30, and once a month accompanied our parents to Holy Communion on a morning when we became old enough. I personally was confirmed by the Reverend Hensley Henson, a wonderful bishop, if a little bit on the harsh side. He was essentially a theologian, and I don't think understood his parishioners terribly well.
Did you get involved in Church Lads Brigade? Boy Scouts?
I was a Boy Scout, yes. Yes, I joined the Boy Scouts. Strangely enough, I suppose the Church Lads Brigade was run from St. Anne's Church, which we weren't in. And we didn't have a Boy Scouts in South Church, so I joined with several of my school friends in which was the Primitive Methodist Scouts. And I was with them, from the age of about 10 till 16 or 18. But by that time, I, having left school, I was going to night classes because it was obvious that my education had stopped short with leaving at that young age. And so I did building construction and economics as well, and at the same...
Before we go any further with that, can we go back to the Scouts?
Yeah.
What were you being taught in the Scouts?
God and our country. That was the great thing. Helping our neighbours. We used to go around doing good deeds, at least we thought they were good deeds, for old people, crippled people, all sorts. I used to go and spend an hour each week with some deaf and dumb people who made more noise than I've ever heard in my life before. But this was all part of the Scouts ethic, scouting was literally an extension of your Christian relation. And in those days, we were all very, very much English Christian boys.
Did you go to camps?
I went to camp twice with the scouts and enjoyed it altogether. In fact, so much so that we prevailed on my dear father to buy an ex-army bell tent, which he erected in our back garden, and we used to sleep in there. That lasted several years until suddenly it became infested with earwigs, and we had to dispose of it reluctantly.